Good morning. Welcome back to series two of Salon in the City. I'm here with Dr. Nikki from the Female Health Doctor Clinic. Nikki has a special interest in women's health and lifestyle medicine and is joining us today to have a chat about all things menopause. Firstly, thank you so much for coming on because I know your time is super precious. You are a very, very busy lady. But you came and did the Salon Wellness Day and did a chat, and we literally could have spoke all day, couldn't we? And the questions were firing, it was brilliant. Yeah. So we had to get you back because there's so much to talk about. So I'm going to pass to you and let you give a little bit of an intro, tell us about what you do, who you are, and then we'll head in with the menopause questions.
So thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to doing this with you. And I think, you know, as you said, you know, special interest in women's health and lifestyle medicine. And my real goal really is that women, you know, are heard, they are supported, and they're able to be the best version of themselves. You know, we were talking earlier, weren't we, about how all the hats that we have to wear and all the demands that are put on us. Mm. And, you know, if we can't do that, if we're not firing on all cylinders, and it's really important that, you know, women are supported and are informed and know what their options are,
yeah,
for how they can sort of, you know, obviously today talking about menopause, how they can sort of navigate this chapter, because you can either, your experience of this time can be either actually really positive or it could be really negative. And could I end up talking to women that tell me they've given up their jobs, their relationships have broken down, and that didn't need to happen. Mm. If they'd been properly supported and given the information and given the choices, you know, of what we've got to offer women, and the importance of that self-care and looking after, you know, all their kind of their movement, their sleep, their food, all these things have a massive interplay. So medication, absolutely important, but we've got to do the other stuff as well.
So, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more there. I think women now are working so much more as well, aren't they? And potentially having babies later in life. So the energy depletes, doesn't it, when perimenopause hits and so on. So having the right support and information is imperative, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
But there's so much conflicting stuff out there. So I've obviously come into that era of my life and it has floored me. I'm a really productive person. I'm very busy. I can manage tasks, no problem. Like, my life is run with good energy.
Yeah.
And then this hit me and I was like, I couldn't finish a sentence. Mm-hmm. I couldn't roll out of bed. Like, my body feels like it's falling to bits. And I'm really fit. Probably the fittest I've ever been in my life.
It feels very unfair, doesn't
and
it?
I'm like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
So it's really hard and quite frustrating. And I think it's so hard as women to just go, well, do you know what, sod this, like, give up, you know. And like you say, people are giving up their jobs and marriages are falling to pieces and so on. So let's get into how it affects brain health.
Yeah.
Things like memory, like the memory focus and brain fog.
Yeah.
Like how does that really affect? It is a thing, right?
100%. So what we know is that as we start to get into a kind of perimenopause and menopause, our estrogen levels are not just declining, but we're also getting quite a lot of fluctuation as well with the hormones. And the problem is that estrogen works in our brain. It helps to make our what we call our neurotransmitters work. So like our serotonin, our dopamine, all those things that help us to be able to concentrate, that help us to be able to focus, follow instructions, multitask, all those things that as women we've become really skilled at doing. And that's why when we hit perimenopause, the wheels come off, because suddenly we're not able to do all these things that we have been managing, and it's to do with this dropping of the hormones, and it becomes really difficult, like you said, you know, not being able to finish sentences, losing your train of thought halfway through, and that's got a massive knock-on effect on your confidence. Then, you know, a really high number of women massively lose their confidence during this stage, especially if they're not sure what's going on. Like, I have women come in and say, I think I've got dementia, because they're forgetting to do things, they're, you know, going out the house without locking the house, you know, leaving the keys in the car, not being able to remember things that have happened. So there's definitely that's happening to do with the chemical levels in the brain, but there's also other stuff happening. So we're not sleeping very well, we've got maybe insomnia as part of kind of menopause, or we're getting up a lot in the night to go for a wee, so that's disturbing our sleep. We're being woken up with hot flushes, maybe we're getting a lot of joint pains every time you roll over, you're kind of a bit floored with that. So we're knackered. We're really tired.
The wheels have fallen off.
And like you said, you know, lots of us are having children later, so we've still got caring responsibilities with them, but also we've got elderly parents. So at the other other end, we're being sort of sandwiched between these, you know, two demands of looking after people and all the time whilst we're probably still working and, you know, still running all the life admin in the house. So it's a massive challenge. In some ways, I'm surprised that we cope with it as well as we do when you start looking at all the things that are sabotaging us.
It's the modern woman, though, isn't it? You know, we have been sort of forced into a life of having to work a bit harder and manage everything. You're still mum, still wife, etc. And I think that's that combined with then they strip us of our hormones and make us work harder. It's just
she's cruel.
So what changes are temporary, or do they have lasting effects, or is it both?
So I think a lot of the symptoms do improve with HRT. So I think when we start to balance out those hormones by replacing particularly estrogen, we do definitely start to see improvements. But I think we also have to sort out some of the other stuff. So we have to make sure that women are sleeping properly, have to make sure that they are doing some self-care, because actually just actually being stressed and having too much to do is gonna make us feel kind of brain foggy and, and sort of stressed and easily overwhelmed. So, you know, we can correct a lot of these things, but also I think we have to like communicate with our partners and say, I can't do this, or you need to step up, I need you to do X, Y, Z. Most men, if you give them really strict instructions, they are able to follow it. What they're not good at is showing initiative. So they, you know, they're like, oh, just tell me what you need me to do. That in itself is annoying, isn't it? Because that just creates energy of...
I can't right now.
But sometimes you have to just go with what you've got.
That's right.
And facilitate to it. And, you know, I think, you know, by communicating about that, that is really important. I think raising kind of profile in workplaces, I think there is a bit more of a movement now, you know, that employers are recognizing that they have to support women, that you're kind of going through the stage or they're going to lose them and they're going to lose their skills. So I do see quite a few patients now that tell me that their companies are giving them, you know, a budget to go and try and get their kind of hormonal health sorted. So I think that's really helpful. So I think, yeah, we definitely do see an improvement with it, but I think sometimes there's other things we have to make sure. Are we getting enough kind of our vitamins? Because actually, if they're not right, that can do it. And sorting out those other lifestyle things with the sleep, the nutrition, the movement, that self-care, having some headspace and some time to be able to sort of process what we're doing.
Do you know, you're right there. And I think when I went, I thought, oh, I'm that age, it must be this, because I've never felt like this before. And I remember going and the doctor saying to me, well, we can't do a blood test. There's no point, because it won't obviously give you any accurate details, which then the more I've looked into this, and I am that sort of person that deep dives and I want to know all the information. The more you look into it, it's like, well, do I need progesterone as well? Do I need the testosterone? What do I need?
Yeah.
But what we're getting is just take this right now. So I had the coil, so I've got a level of progesterone within my coil. Okay, tick that box. So they gave me the estrogen gel. Brilliant. Yes, it definitely helped. But that's it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if my estrogen and progesterone are balanced. Mm-hmm. So how are we supposed to go to the doctor and get the right information in order to help with that particular... That's just one of many symptoms, but...
So I think I think blood tests can be really helpful. I think in the beginning, though, what we're really looking at with the blood test is to make sure that we're not missing anything, because menopause can be a master mimicker. So actually, if a woman comes to me, and the guidance is if a woman is under the age of 45, we should be thinking about doing bloods to look for other things, to make sure, like, is their thyroid okay? Because actually 40s is a time when the thyroid can go off. So really important, checking thyroid, checking vitamin levels, you know, what your sugar levels and things doing. The problem with the hormone levels is there is quite a lot of fluctuation in it. And if a woman is still having pretty regular periods, or they're on some sort of hormonal contraception which affects it, the hormone levels are not that helpful necessarily. So that's why we don't check it. And it's not because we don't want to, it's because it's not necessarily going to change what we're going to do in that first stage. Mm-hmm. I think then when the hormone levels can be helpful is if you are on a really good dose of estrogen, but you're still having symptoms maybe around kind of loss of libido, or maybe sometimes a little bit with brain fog, you know, thinking then about things like testosterone. The problem with the testosterone is that the British Menopause Society only recognises it being used for loss of libido. I think, though, this will change in time. And already anecdotally, we are seeing women that do seem to really find testosterone helpful for other things in addition to the libido. And I think, I reckon probably, I do prescribe testosterone, and I always say to women, I reckon in about 50% of women, it's a massive game changer for whatever reason we started it. The other 50%, it doesn't tend to make much difference. So it definitely isn't a magic bullet. Mm-hmm. And particularly from a libido point of view, there's other stuff that we have to sort out alongside it. But definitely, I think looking at testosterone levels can be very helpful when we're looking at, kind of functioning. Progesterone levels, I think, again, there's still probably not great guidelines on that. If I've got someone that I think is on a really decent dose of estrogen and they don't seem to be making much progress, sometimes checking a level at that point can be helpful, because there are definitely some women who don't absorb very well through different preparations. And sometimes people are told, are not giving really clear instructions for how to apply it. So we've got a friend who told me she was applying 4 pumps of gel all to the one area on her body, and but couldn't understand why she wasn't feeling better. And really what we say is that each pump of gel should be applied to the size of an A4 sheet of paper of skin in order to get maximal absorption. But if you're not told that and you don't know to do then how are you going to really be getting the best benefit from your gel?
And there you go. I think this is the point. I think exactly what you're saying. It's information is key, isn't it? Knowledge, education. How do we get the best? I mean, we know that these things are linked, and we're already struggling with not being able to focus, concentrate, and then we've got all this information that we've then got to go and find ourselves, or what do you think the link is between menopause and mental health conditions? Like, because it can create this anxiety, I know my anxiety. I was never particularly an anxious person.
Yeah.
And now sometimes I'm like, I don't want to leave the house. I don't want to be seen, and I'm like, that's not me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think there's the link?
100%. And it's one of those really interesting things that I think historically as women, they've just been given antidepressants. Oh, you're anxious, have some antidepressants. Yeah. Whereas if I've got a woman like with that story like you've just given me, who's never ever so struggled with her mental health, who comes in her kind of late 30s, 40s, 50s, and tells me she's having panic attacks, she's becoming more socially isolated, she's really anxious, she's crying at work. This is perimenopause until proven otherwise in lots of ways, because we know that definitely those hormonal fluctuations have got a big impact on how we're feeling. And actually, again, like if you're not sleeping very well, you're struggling with brain fog, you're losing your confidence, that's all going to feed into that that level of a kind of change in mental health. There is also, though, a cohort of women who actually, when you look at their history, they have really struggled at different periods in their life where there have been big hormone fluctuations. So they may have had a really difficult time in their teenage years, so around puberty, during pregnancy and postnatally, and then perimenopause. And what we sometimes see is that these women in their 30s start to get really bad premenstrual symptoms, so around mood and other symptoms. And they go from having really bad PMS, say those first kind of 2 weeks from ovulation to having their period, start their period, oh, I feel like me again, until the next ovulation, and then the cycle starts again. So often we see women at this stage, and I know that probably then what's going to start to happen is they're going to be transitioning then into perimenopause, where it's not going to be such a distinct time thing, but just in those 1 or 2 weeks before their period, it's going to start to spread throughout the whole of that month. Women as well with ADHD, quite often a lot of their coping mechanisms and their ability to mask and things, they manage, and then suddenly they hit perimenopause and they suddenly become completely overwhelmed. And that's because with the ADHD and the chemicals that's happening in the brain with the low dopamine and things, they're really sensitive to that estrogen level dropping, but also the big fluctuations that we're getting around perimenopause. So often see women that either are undiagnosed and we talk about it and they go through a diagnosis, or they've been diagnosed and they're really struggling despite maybe being on medication for their ADHD, and that's when looking at the hormones and balancing it can be really, really helpful.
And I guess sleep plays into this massively, doesn't it? Because if you're anxious, you don't sleep. If you're and the more tired you become, the less you sleep, I think.
Yeah.
There are, like last night was a prime example for me. I must have been up 5 or 6 times going for a wee, and then I can't get back to sleep and I'm rolling around. I've got bad shoulders, I can't learn it. And then I'm like, oh, then I get more frustrated. So how can we sleep better?
Yeah.
Because sleep is where we repair, right?
Yes, sleep is so important. Yeah. And lots of us, you end up sacrificing sleep. So it's normally that bit of the day, isn't it, where we end up trying to catch up on admin when actually we probably should just turn off our phone and go to sleep. But, you know, life gets in the way. So I think things that are really helpful for sleep are, you know, kind of going back to basics with your sleep hygiene. So making sure that you're kind of not eating too late, not exercising too late as well, because that can often make us feel a bit alert. Making sure that we're not doing work and screens in bed. Thinking about things as well, like what time of day are we taking our estrogen? Because some women get really alert with estrogen. So actually, if you are sensitive in that way, put your estrogen on in the morning so that you're then getting that benefit of that alertness, but you're not putting it on before bed. Trying to think about maybe if you are still struggling with sleep, looking at maybe what progesterone you're on. So obviously you've got the Mirena coil, but we know that the oral progesterone, which we like to use, which is body identical, it's very similar to our own natural progesterone, that has got a naturally sedative quality. So actually, if I've got a woman that's really struggling with sleep, that can be a really helpful tool to use. And that's one of the safest progesterones from the point of view for a breast cancer risk. And we know that probably, and I think we're going to learn more about this, that as our progesterone levels are naturally declining, that probably is feeding into why we're not sleeping. And that's where this progesterone, I think, can be really, really helpful.
That's very interesting that you should say that, because this was a topic that we covered, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At the Wellness Day a couple of months back. And you very kindly spoke to a couple of the retreaters who have since come to me, have since been to their GPs and made the suggestion.
Oh.
The one GP in particular said, that is an absolutely fantastic idea.
Oh, that's really good.
And I don't know why I haven't thought of it myself. Asked what your name was, because she was fascinated with what you do. So, and it's really been a massive game changer for this lady.
So,
and now she sleeps better. She's happier. Everyone's happier at home because she's not ready to.
Everyone's happier, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Life is back on track. And that is just from sleep. So if you can nail one of these many symptoms that we get, and sleep is one of them, it's the one, I think, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it's got a bit.
Because if you're knackered and knackered and knackered, it's just...
And that anxiety of how are you going to manage this if you're knackered. The other thing that's helpful, which you've mentioned, getting up five times a night for a wee, is that actually... our kind of pelvic floor, our bladder health and things, even with body HRT, can struggle. And that's where using something like a vaginal estrogen can be a real game changer.
Didn't even know this existed.
Yet. And I think sometimes people think, oh, well, I'm on body HRT, so I don't need vaginal estrogen. But actually, even if you didn't want to take whole body HRT, why would you not use vaginal estrogen? Because it's really, really safe. We know that it doesn't really build up in the bloodstream. It's very, very locally absorbed. We use it in women who are very elderly. We use it in women who've had breast cancer because of how local the effect is. But it's got a massive impact on things like sort of urinary symptoms, how often we're having to get up for a wee, how often we have to go for a wee in the daytime, can we hold it, UTIs, you know, or cystitis-y type symptoms. Vaginal dryness, inability to either orgasm, or the orgasms don't feel as good, or you're having to work a lot harder for the orgasm, which when you're knackered, I can't really be honest.
Such a story,
Why would you bother? So I think if you ever hear me talk, I bang on about vaginal estrogen and lubricant a lot.
It is because it's one of those subjects that people actually don't like to talk about, do they? But we are going to. There's another podcast coming, ladies and gentlemen. You might need to know about this too, but it is coming. We're doing that one next, aren't we? Because it is so important. But going back to the vaginal estrogen, I need to know more about.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the worst bladder control now, and it's got worse and worse and worse. Hence my 5-night visits.
Yeah.
You know, it's awful. So I think that is something that it's never been given as an option. Even when I've expressed what my symptoms might be, I didn't even know it existed until you and I had a conversation about it. So there are other things that people can do to find this out. Now, we are going to get to this at the end because, you know, you have an array of information, and hopefully we could share that QR code. I'll explain later at the end of the podcast with all the information, so do take notes as we're talking because it's a lot of information, but also we can send you to the right place to get all this information, so don't panic, ladies, we've got your back. Okay, so moving on then to the physical health and long-term risk. We've just talked about things like breast cancer and you know, can that be a risk, but let's talk about the influence of cardiovascular health and why it heart risks are increased at this stage.
So, and I think it's really important to recognise this, because people get really worried about having HRT and getting breast cancer, but actually your risk of dying of breast cancer is 3%, your risk of dying of heart disease is 52%.
Which is why isn't that? It's a scaremongering, isn't it? It's a bit like the MMR jab all those years ago, you know, don't have it all together. But it's not 3%.
I know, and it's partly that's because we have got better HRT now than we used to. And unfortunately, so I qualified as a GP in 2008, and not long after that, there was a big study that was published, which scared everybody senseless, because it basically said that if you give women HRT, they're all going to die. But that was based on older type of HRT, which is synthetic and has got some risks associated with it around sort of clotting and breast cancer. But also, it was done in quite an older population, so women in their 60s. It wasn't really looking at women in their 40s and 50s. So it was a bit of a flawed study, but I think what it did is it really swung the pendulum back, and suddenly as GPs we were told, don't prescribe it. If you do prescribe it for a really short period of time, otherwise you're going to kill off women. And I think now it's been really hard to do like a massive education around GPs who have still got that kind of echo in their head about, well, I don't want to do any harm to this woman. How can I keep her okay? Whereas so these newer types of HRT, where we're having our estrogen through our skin, so in the gel which you've mentioned, a patch or a spray, this is really similar to our own estrogen, and so it hasn't got any of the risks with the older type. So it doesn't make the blood more sticky, so it doesn't increase our risk of clots in legs or lungs, but we also know that it's then protective for our heart health, protecting us against heart attacks and probably strokes as well. And the reason is because estrogen is really important for cardiovascular health, and that's why as women we don't tend to have heart attacks and things in our 40s or 50s. We get them when we're postmenopausal women, and that's because the estrogen levels have then dropped down. Whereas men, it's more common they get it in their 40s and their 50s because they haven't got that protective benefit from the estrogen. So the estrogen is really, really important. And what we see when we often start women on HRT is things like their blood pressure improves and things with it. So it has a really big impact on things like blood pressure, our cholesterol profile as well. If we think about our good fats and our bad fats and how we sort of build up fatty plaques in the blood vessels, it really helps with that. So I think using these newer types of HRT, which are much, much safer, are a big influencer on that kind of cardiovascular health. And I think also this is going to move us away from saying to women, you can only be on HRT for a very short period of time, and once you turn 60 or however old, you've got to come off it. I think it is going to be much more of a risk-benefit discussion on an individual level with a woman about, you know, how they're feeling, what their sort of family history is like, and what their risk factors are like. I joke, you're going to be taking mine off me as you lower me into the coffin, you know, like, you're not having my estrogen back. So I think it's women need to know how beneficial it is from a cardiovascular health point of view, because often they'll come in and they'll say, I'm really worried about breast cancer, but when I ask them about their history, they've got a really strong history of things like diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, and actually saying, let's look at those, you know, where are those kind of benefits that you're going to get with it. So yeah, I think we definitely shouldn't underestimate the impact that it has.
My dad dropped dead at 62. No warning whatsoever, and he had cardiovascular disease. So for me, it worries me. It's obviously in the gene pool somewhere. And my cholesterol, when I got tested not long ago, was it was about 2 years ago, was high, and it really shocked me, because I eat really well, but the more you look into it, you know, it's not necessarily about diet. And it is quite frightening. I think mine was a spike in perimenopause or whatever, I'm not quite sure, but it's come down now, so we're in a good place. We've worked really hard on it. But how do you know? I mean, what screenings or lifestyles changes should women prioritise their heart health? What can we do?
So when you turn 40, you are entitled to an NHS health check, where they should be checking as a bare minimum diabetes and cholesterol as a bare minimum. Often when I see women, we'll do other things. We'll do like thyroid, you know, checking for anaemia. Because what often happens is in perimenopause, women's periods get really heavy, or they have them much more often. So actually we often see women and they're exhausted because they're not sleeping, but they're also quite low in iron, or maybe even to the extent that they're anaemic. So I think, you know, it's using the opportunity to have those health checks. I think also we're seeing a lot more women in the clinic that are coming through to us and are picking one of our packages where they can have a full health screening, looking at all their bloods and their levels and things. And included in all of our appointments is a follow-up, all of our blood tests is a follow-up appointment. So, because there's lots of companies out there where you can just send off a sample and then you get a report back, but with nobody to go through it with you.
Yeah.
That, personally, I think that's really irresponsible. Mm. Also, with our blood tests, it's done that a nurse will come to your house or your work, she will take the blood test from you so that you then know that you're getting a really good blood test sample, because sometimes these ones that you do yourself, they clot and that can affect the accuracy and things with them. So
that's interesting, didn't know that either.
Yeah, so I think, you know, having that checked is really good. And having that health check, seeing what your blood pressure is doing. One of the things as well that I think feeds into cardiovascular health as well is ability to exercise. If you are knackered with joint pain and hot sweats, why would you want to go and get hot and sweaty in the gym? It's like torture, isn't it? And quite often you've lost your confidence, maybe you're carrying a bit more weight around your middle, you don't feel as confident in the lycra. But actually, if we can get you to feel good, to be not having flushes, to be feeling so stronger, your ability to engage in some sort of exercise, you know, and we'll talk about, you know what we should be doing, that's going to be massive, not just from how we're going to feel physically, but actually, as you know, for your mental health, isn't it? Yeah. For that massive feel-good boost of dopamine and serotonin when you're working out and you come away feeling really pumped about it. So we have to enable women to be able to do all these things that we tell them that they have to do. You must exercise, you must eat better, you know, but actually if you feel like shit, how can you do that, that is
exactly my point. You're at a point where you can't, because you need the support to get there in the first place. And when you get there, you want to do all these things, because believe me, they do make you feel better. I know that better than anybody, but sometimes I literally crawl to the gym, but I won't not go.
Yeah.
Because I know afterwards, I never regret it.
Exactly,
I always feel
better. Never regret a session,
Yeah, but sometimes to get there, it is like the hardest thing. It's like treading mud, you know. Like, God. And then I walk in and I look at everybody and I just think, oh, piss off. And then I leave and I'm like, ha ha, did it, you know.
And everyone's looking at you saying, yes, piss off.
Yeah. I've finished your workout.
Yeah.
I did it. You'll feel great in a minute. I just need to stand at the door and tell everybody.
And I think it's also about, if you are time short, making that exercise count. So not feeling like you've got to spend hours and hours doing cardio. Mm. You know, actually, we've talked about, haven't we?
Yes.
You know, actually where this is at is doing things like strength training, resistance training, lifting heavier weights, doing some sort of restorative exercise, you know, whether it's like a yoga or a Pilates or something, you know, mixed in with, you know, a bit of cardiovascular or high intensity stuff. But you don't have to go and run on the machine for an hour, you know.
Oh my God.
Because actually that's not gonna give you as much benefit as you think it might do.
No. Yeah. And this is why I started with the retreats and the wellness side of my business, because this is what I found out, which leads nicely into my next question. But just before that, that's what I wanted to show people, that you don't actually have to run a marathon to lose some weight, to get fit, to all the other things that tick those boxes. And strength and condition actually is a lot easier. I think everybody thinks they're going to rock up and end up like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
You are not. You know, I wish I could.
Yeah.
Because I'm dying for this muscle and I've been at this 7 years. Like, come on, give me some. So it's not as easy as you think, you know, but it's so bloody good for you.
Yes.
And your bone density, isn't it? So that leads me on actually to my next question. Like, what happens to bone density during and after menopause? And what steps can we help prevent osteoporosis, which is a big problem, isn't it?
And I think that, so basically, again, it's the estrogen levels dropping, it's reducing our bone density, and also our muscle strength. So if we're more likely to fall over, or if we fall over, we can't get ourselves off the floor. If we fall over, we're much more likely to break something. And actually, if you've got somebody who we know has either got osteoporosis or osteopenia, which is the stage before osteoporosis, the first line treatment for them should be talking to them about HRT, and then talking about the kind of lifestyle changes and things they can do. So a lot of women are not doing enough weight bearing exercise, and it's that that will really help to build up their bone density. They're not doing the strength and the resistance training, so they're not getting that improvement in their muscle mass. As we age, from the age of 30, we get something called sarcopenia, which is kind of wasting of our muscles. So every year that we're aging, you know, our muscles are becoming weaker. That often is combined with us as women putting on weight, and then we're restricting our food even more. So we're eating less and less in order to try and maintain a weight that we're holding as an ideal. We're often not eating enough protein because we've grown up on a being told, you know, low fat this, low fat that, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
And being sort of, you know, super skinny. So we're not getting enough protein. We're getting a lot of muscle wastage. So that's reducing our strength. And then say we're more likely to fall over, and if we fall over, we're more likely to break something. So it's really important that we are fueling our bodies properly, that we're eating enough calories and we're eating the right calories, so we're getting enough protein in. It's still a lot of us probably don't eat enough protein, and really the numbers slightly vary, but we say kind of rough numbers sort of between 1 to 2 grams of protein per how much you weigh per kilo of weight, depending on how much training and things you're doing. And actually, if you start adding that up and tracking it in like a MyFitnessPal, it's quite hard to eat a lot of protein.
Yes,
and it's a bit of a mental shift, isn't it? I don't just want to have a salad. I need to have my, really boost that protein in it. So there's definitely, as women, we're quite afraid of sometimes eating these foods because we think that they're going to make us put on weight. We don't want to bulk up at the gym, so we're not doing strength training. We're wasting our lives doing loads and loads of cardio. So the osteoporosis is massive. We're living longer. So actually, things like if you fall over and break your hip, that's got a massive impact for your mortality kind of later on. So you've got a much, in 1 year after you've broken your hip as an older person, you've got a much higher risk of dying, a higher risk of not being able to live independently and ending up having to go into, say, a nursing home or a residential home, or being at home and needing care. Mm. So don't fall over and break your hip is the kind of first message. And
I've had first-hand experience that with my nan.
Yeah.
You know, she fell, broke her shoulder. That was it.
Yeah.
After that, ended up in
no
nursing. And this
back,
was the woman that was driving, cooking, washing, cleaning her own home, taking full care of herself. Within 3 years, gone.
Yeah.
And
so sad.
Yeah. She was overweight. She was, you know, she wasn't the healthiest of ladies anyway. But you can, when you've seen that happen and that decline of this woman that was just so, you know, such a force to be reckoned with, to go to, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, before you know it, we are, like, approaching 50, and you think, bloody hell, how did I get here?
Yeah, we need to do that.
So before I know it, I'll hopefully, you know, make it to approaching 80. But I want to be fit, able, and be able to do all those things without, like you say, falling over. And I couldn't stress enough what you're saying, you know, what I've learned with my business over the last 6 years. It's just been so enlightening. Do you think that we should all be going in our 40s and above for things like the DEXA scan? And the reason I asked this is we had Leah on for our nutritionist, and she spoke highly of the DEXA scan and getting the information and knowing what your record gets, because you can actually reverse it in a way, can't you?
Yeah. And I think that can sometimes help for your decision making around starting HRT or thinking about, you know, how you're going to sort of channel kind of nutrition and sort of movement. I don't think it's something that we'll ever get on the NHS.
No,
so I think we have to probably accept that.
Yes.
However, I do think it's something that if you have got the budget for it, it's definitely worth considering, particularly if you've got a family history or maybe you've got other risk factors. So say maybe you've had an illness, or maybe you've been on high dose steroids, which affects our bones. Maybe if you have, when you were younger, like women who've had an eating disorder where they have had very, very low body weight and their periods and things have stopped. You know, those kind of risk factors, definitely sort of think about it. That actually, if you've got the budget for it, and they're not hugely expensive. We're talking hundreds of pounds as opposed to thousands of pounds. It is something that we do through our clinic as well. So it's something that women can
afford. This is great.
Yeah. And I think if you've got the budget and you've got some risk factors, I think or even just from a personal interest point of view,
I said to Leah I was going to go and get one done, and I just haven't had a chance to get round to it, but I am beginning to see you, aren't I? So
we'll put that into
it's going on the list. Going on the list, and it'll be interesting to do it and then come back and discuss it. I'm happy to discuss my results, and but then we can see if, you know, maybe come back another few months later or whatever and see if I can make any improvements, because I'm sure I'll need them myself. But so we've talked about bone density. Yeah. How does it affect muscle mass? I mean, at the moment, I've got the most incredible joint pain in my arm, like I have bicep tendonitis or a deltoid injury of sorts. I'm having physio, acupuncture, nothing's working. Oh. I am in agony. Oh, and with my job, obviously I'm blow drying all the time. It's not fun. I can't lie on it. I can't lift it over a 45 degree angle. Like, I'm suffering. Yeah. So I think for somebody like me who weight trains consistently 5 days a week, and Pilates twice a week.
You do all the right things.
And I eat well. Yeah. You know, I don't over drink. I'm not a smoker. I am doing everything. And I feel like I've been screwed right over with this. So it does it really affect it, or have I done something to myself? And I'm asking on a generalised, not just for me. But
I think probably what there's probably a few things happening. So I think, again, with kind of ageing and declining estrogen, we're getting more inflammation and things in kind of both the joints and in the tendons, like you're describing with this sort of tendonitis. I think some of it as well may be that maybe kind of sort of historically, like kind of pre-HRT and pre maybe you being kind of training in a safe way and things like that. Sometimes we're not, you know, sometimes we have done damage or if we've kind of fallen and things like that. It may be because you are doing quite a lot of training, and sometimes just looking at maybe some techniques and things, maybe sometimes do a bit of a fine tune. There might be a different way to do something to get the same result but without putting strain on that joint. I think also, you know, there's a bit more interest about testosterone and kind of joint and kind of muscle strength and things like that. And I wonder, as we start to get more data around that, will it be interesting to see how that sort of compares? Vitamin D, we've talked about before as well, haven't we? Because lots of us are not taking vitamin D, and that's really important because a lot of women come in and they say they feel tired, their muscles are aching, their joints are aching. They start with supplement vitamin D, or we check their levels, and actually they're quite low and they feel better on the vitamin D. So I think you're doing a lot of the right things, and it may be a certain level of acceptance of trying to do this journey and recover from it, because you know Olympic athletes have injuries. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes it is just bad luck, and it's about trying to sort of facilitate it. I think there is definitely, as well, they're looking at more things like injectables, so injecting like hyaluronic acid and things like that to try and help to take down inflammation, but also trying to replace some of those things that have worn away and things.
So that's interesting. That's better than the steroid injection, surely is better.
So it might be worth, depending on how you get on with it, it might be worth going and seeing an orthopaedic sort of specialist and having
going on Wednesday.
Are you going Wednesday?
Well, chiropractor. Okay. She's McTimony. So I'm trying all.
So you try everything, don't you? Because you become desperate. Because if you can't do those things that you want to try and do, that you know feels good in all those other areas.
And I get frustrated, and I'm definitely, you know, adjusting my training to make it suit so that I can still train and not go crazy and kill my entire family in the process.
Which they're all rooting for as well.
They're like, go to the gym, for God's sake. But sometimes I think other symptoms such as headaches and stuff can play a real issue,
massive.
I mean, I know if I'm dehydrated, my head starts thumping, or I'm decaffeinated. Sadly, that is one of my worst things. My head will start to thump. But can that be related?
And actually, increased migraines and headaches is massive during perimenopause and menopause. For some women, going through menopause cures them of their migraines. If they were somebody who always used to get a menstrual migraine, you know, either coming on their period just before their period, once their period stopped, they often feel actually they're a lot better. Other people, and I'm included in this, and this is one of my reasons why I knew that I was perimenopause, was that I get horrific migraines, and they massively ramped up during perimenopause, and they've been really, really difficult to control. And they have got a massive impact on then how you feel and how you're able to function, don't they?
Yeah.
So, and I think feeding into that is the fact that, you know, not sleeping very well, when you're tired, you're much more likely to sort of trigger the migraines and the headaches. If you've got sort of neck pain and shoulder pain, that, you know, ever holding a lot of tension and things in our neck, if we're really stressed and we're struggling, that then feeds in with the headaches. And that's one of the things that when somebody comes for like a menopause consultation, people often say, well, just give me the best HRT, whatever's the best thing, just give me that. But actually, there's not one best thing, and it's about really drilling down on their lifestyle and what their symptoms are, where their needs are. So if somebody has got headaches and migraines, what they need is a really steady release of the estrogen. So often I will say to them, would you think about a patch? Because I think for you, this would be the best option, because you're going to get a real nice steady stream, and you're not going to get as much fluctuations compared to maybe if you were using, say, the gel. So it's about working with the women, and that's one of the benefits, I think, when I see women in the clinic, is that I've got a half an hour appointment with them. We've got so much time to really drill down on all their lifestyle, all their symptoms, things they've had in the past, and not just HRT they've had in the past, contraception they've had in the past, and what's worked or what hasn't worked for them. You know, and then you really are tailoring it to them. And I think, you know, that's the challenge in an NHS clinic. I always run late because I can't work to a 10-minute appointment.
No.
You can't look after somebody in 10 minutes.
It's really hard. Yeah. I think this is the problem. A, trying to get a GP appointment now is impossible if you can get past a receptionist who's, you know, and they've got a job to do too, granted, but you've got to share all your information and then they decide who you're best suited to. And sometimes you don't end up with who you're best suited to. And then they're running late.
It's really hard.
I always fear that if my doctor's running half hour late, I'm getting far less out of what I need from my doctor at that point. But it's not their fault. I get it. We totally understand where the NHS is at. But that is where somebody like you and your business is so, so important. If you can and do have access to being able to, you know, we can spend money on other things, can't we? You know, why aren't we looking to invest in our health a little bit better and getting that quality of information where somebody has got the time to spend with you? And it does make such a massive difference, doesn't it?
And you know, I think, you know, if you're seeing one of us in the clinic, you know that we've got that special interest in women's health. You know,
we've done
extra qualifications and particularly like in things like menopause. And often what I say to women is, you know, I can be here to advocate for you as well. So you know, we can do that consultation, we can put together a plan that we agree on. I can maybe initiate the prescription, but then we can write to your NHS GP and say, you know, would you consider being able to take over prescribing? And a lot of time, you know, the GPs are okay to do that. Mm. What we're doing normally is not anything crazy or off the wall that is not safe.
Exactly.
It's that stuff that is recognised by the British Menopause Society. So, but there are definitely some areas where the access to some HRT is limited. So where we're lucky in Gloucestershire that we can prescribe testosterone as GPs, I've got colleagues in other parts of the countries where they're not allowed to, and that's really tricky for women. Because so our clinic, although we've got a physical clinic in Milton Keynes, I've got a virtual clinic mainly doing video and telephone calls, and we see women from all over the UK. So in some ways, you know, it is a little bit of a postcode lottery, which it shouldn't be. So sometimes within that situation, then we can continue to support women with that bit of the prescribing if it can't happen. But things like having investigations or having a DEXA or having a blood test, it doesn't matter if you're not where we are. We've got a network, you know, where we can facilitate you to have those scans or DEXAs and bloods done by you. So that is a good thing, isn't it, with technology? And I think with COVID, we all became much more confident about using, you know, technology and that kind of having that flexibility with it, and you know, being able to offer evening appointments and weekend appointments and things where, you know, most of us, because we're having to work full time, you know, Monday to Friday, you know, and then you have to take time off work, and you know, it's a nightmare, isn't it? So I think to be able to create that access and time for women is really important. And I always kind of pinch myself after a day of where I've done clinic appointments, and I message my colleagues and be like, I love what we do. We're so lucky that we are able to do the job that we love and be able to support women and be able to, like you said, you know, women, we should be empowering women and you know, we should be supporting each other, and that's what we're doing.
I think it's such a serious problem.
Huge.
You know, and that is, if you were to strip a man of all of his hormones, you know, they pretty much find a solution pretty quickly, and they have done, you know, for certain conditions. And you just think, so unfair. I think as women, we're just supposed to just battle through and get on and not moan, and you know, it's just not that easy. You just wake up one day less of the person that you were, literally, physically. And it's hard to drag yourself out of that, isn't it?
And I think this happens, and this is why it's really important to talk about it. And that's one of the things we talked about at the Wellness Retreat, wasn't it? Was talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to your daughters, you know. Because actually this narrative of you need to just get on with it, it's your hormones, I think is really damaging. And I think, you know, sometimes people come in and they tell me how horrific their periods are. You know, they're fainting, they're missing school, they're vomiting with period pain. And they've been told that your periods are painful, you just need to get on with it. And you're like, what? You know, there's so much other stuff that can be done and looked at. So I think as women, it's really important that we are educating ourselves and we're educating, you know, our children and young people. And we should be talking about this in schools and universities, and talking about how to fuel and stay active. Because again, we're seeing, I don't know if you've heard of a condition called REDS, where basically women are doing a lot of training, but they're not fueling appropriately. So although you may look at them and actually their BMI might be in a normal healthy range, and you don't look at them and think, well, you don't look really skinny, but actually they're not having periods, and that's because they've switched off the kind of hormone messages because they are under fueling. And that's going to have a really big knock-on effect thinking about future things for like fertility and for the bone health. Those are that group of women that we would worry about, you know, potentially fertility and osteoporosis. So this discussion about hormones needs to happen before they start their periods.
I agree, and why isn't it?
And educating the men as well about, you know, actually how 100% difficult it is.
That was the next retreat that I wanted to do. I wanted to do a couples retreat and educate the men on what menopause actually looks like, because Dave will often say to me, for God's sake, Zoe, because I can't finish a sentence, and he's like, oh, I'm supposed to be a mind reader now. I'm like, it's going on in there, but it won't come out.
I can't remember the words.
Like, oh, I don't normally have any problem talking, which is true, I don't. So it's even more frustrating. So men definitely do, you know, my husband in particular. The amount of times I've sat him down and said, listen, right, I don't want to feel like this. I can't help it. Is this like me? Is this what you're expecting me to behave like on the regular? And he will say no. Yeah. Right, okay. So rather than make it a me problem, ask me, you know, what can you do? How can I help? What's going on? You know, but they just go, oh, can't deal with this.
And I always say to him, it must be amazing for you to wake up every day and your hormones just to be the same.
Yes.
Whether it's a Monday or a Wednesday or the third week of the month, it's just the same.
So true.
Because even with HRT, we have still, you know, in our 40s and, you know, early 50s, we've probably still got our own kind of hormonal fluctuations and things that are happening. And it is a roller coaster. So yeah, unfortunately, they're not mind readers. But I think, you know, I think the communication is really important. I think also, you know, I quite often spend a lot of time apologising to my husband for being a bitch. Do you know what I mean? I think I'm really sorry.
You're good, I don't.
That was out of order. But for the love of God, please can you put the stuff in the dishwasher? You know, so it has to be a two-way street. They have to support you and facilitate things and try and pick up some of that mental load. I saw someone had posted a thing that I thought was hilarious. It was basically, if anybody ever does something wrong in the house or hasn't pulled the weight or done something, they've got a theoretical person called Bob, and they're like, bloody Bob, he's not emptied the bloody dishwasher again, bloody Bob. And then they're both angry at Bob, and they sort of are united in their frustration that it doesn't matter who actually was Bob that time and didn't do the dishwasher. But I thought, actually, that's a genius way, isn't it, of actually trying to make it a bit funny and to kind of bring you together. As
pushing you about.
There
is a bin, nobody got it, it's all right, tea's on the table, the fairy's a bin.
Yeah,
you know, I do get the eye roll. The guy rolling that, off she goes again. Another thing that I do think really affects our mood, though, as we get sort of through this process, is weight gain.
Yes.
Especially around the middle section. We're all striving to look like Instagram models and all the rest of it. And the pressure right there on women, especially women in their 40s. Because if you look back at women in their 40s years ago, I mean, look at the Golden Girls.
Thinking of the Golden Girls. Right. We look a lot better than that,
We definitely look a lot better than the Golden Girls. But that's the point, isn't it? How women have evolved into this, you know, when you get into your 40s, you're supposed to be sexier. Yeah. You're supposed to be fitter. You're supposed to be in the prime of your life. Yeah, everything's been stripped away from you. And, you know, your hair's thinning.
Yeah.
You're gaining weight. You've got no energy. Your skin changes. All these things are a thing, aren't they?
100%.
So, you know, I know it's mostly hormone-driven, but are there any sort of more effective things that we can add in with medical treatments beyond cosmetics? I'm not talking your Botox and your fillers. We know all about that, but
so I think it's an understanding of why it's happening in the first place. So again, this bloody estrogen levels dropping off, what that does is it affects our sensitivity to insulin. So not only are we finding it a lot harder to lose weight, but when we're gaining weight, it's going around our middle, and that's a really hard fact.
Why does that happen?
To do with how insulin resistant we get. So and we're not as sensitive to sort of fluctuations in sugar. sugar levels, and we're finding it a lot harder to burn off the excess calories that we're eating. I think also we have to look at kind of what we're eating. So again, trying to really sort of prioritize that protein, because protein helps us to feel full. It also helps with keeping our muscle strong. And actually, if you haven't got a good muscle kind of baseline, that has an impact on our metabolic rate and how, you know, our ability to be able to burn calories. Also, having that weight around our middle, that's a dangerous fat. So that's a fat that's increasing our risk of cancers, it's increasing our risk of fatty liver, which then feeds into type 2 diabetes. So it's really important to try and help to get that weight off the middle. So things like not eating lots of empty carbohydrates. So when you're having carbohydrates, making it count. So making sure it's like a slow release energy source, getting a lot of carbohydrates from your veggies, not just kind of eating kind of what we call your white or your beige carbs. So, you know, running, fueling, yeah, pasta, fueling on Mars bars to kind of get you through because you've not slept, because you're just making it a lot harder for yourself with it. And I think also around the kind of weight training, isn't it, about sort of trying to sort of focus on, you know, whole body workouts, so sort of concentrating on core, also on pelvic floor, because actually that affects how we look from like a posture point of view, but also our ability to be able to do a lot of the exercises we're doing. If we're having a lot of kind of bladder leakage, or we haven't got good core strength, we're going to end up with more back pain or prolapses and things like that. So it's really important to, you know, make sure that you're working on that kind of pelvic bit of your health. Again, the vaginal estrogen can come into it as well. The pelvic floor is also really important for, like, you know, being able to orgasm, as well as being able to control, hold our bladder and not be on him during sex. So, you know, you know, we must neglect that bit of us, and we always think about it, don't we, when we've had a baby, but actually it's really, really important now.
I've just got back into more Pilates work, mm-hmm. as well as my S&C training, and that is so focused on pelvic floor, and you really forget that you're not holding in, you know. And when they get you to align your pelvis, you think, oh my god, it is there.
Yeah, it's, and when you look in the mirror, often just that's the change in posture, you look better
you
as
really
well, don't
do.
You?
Yeah. I'm trying to sort of, you know, build that into my everyday life, not just every Pilates session I go to, but it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, you know.
And I work with a specialist on physio, who I think would be great actually for you to have on. So she has done a couple of these education events with me, and she does a course called Holistic Core Restore, which is almost a built on to Pilates even. It's even more detailed than that. And what she does is she really helps to strengthen your pelvic floor, but also teaching you how to relax your pelvic floor. So, and I definitely do see this with women. So a lot of us, we're holding so much tension all the time in our bodies and our necks and our jaw, that we're also clenching our pelvic floor. So we're holding it in tightness a lot of the time, which then means that we're not able to properly relax it. So when we go and have a wee, we're not properly emptying our bladder because we're not fully relaxing it. We're also probably doing it quickly because we're having to go somewhere, or you're out and you're hovering on the top of the seat because you don't want to sit on the seat, isn't it? So you're not properly, you're not properly emptying the bladder. So then you're much more likely to get a leakage. You're more likely to get a UTI. So it's really important to be able to both contract the pelvic floor, but also to be able to relax it as well. So I've been amazed what a difference. So she does a 6-week course where she comes to your house and does it. And I've done two sessions with her so far, and it already has been a massive game changer. And I think, you know, actually, this is the kind of thing women should be able to access on the NHS, because it would save so much money in all the drugs and things that we give women for sort of bladder problems and surgeries and stuff we do for prolapse. But she's really, really skilled, and she has also done extra training with the British Menopause Society, so she really understands that interplay with the hormones. So
let's talk about her a little bit, because this is fascinating. Actually, I didn't know this existed, and this is something that I really could do with some help with. So she'll come to the house, she does a 6-week course, and within that six weeks course, she is helping you train your pelvis properly.
Yeah.
Who knew that it needed, like, I don't even know if I'm doing it right.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? Am I just clenching my bum muscles, or am I doing my pelvic floor?
Don't know. Yeah. And even in Pilates, I'm looking at everybody else thinking, but you can't see on the inside.
Yeah.
It is like, am I doing this properly?
Yeah.
So again, this is that is just amazing.
Well, she said,
I'm going to have, just take all my money.
She said to me, she has Pilates teacher come to her for sessions as well. So obviously they're good at doing it to a certain level. But I think what she's able to do is really kind of drill down with that extra knowledge and things. And it's a 6-week course, but it's not every week. So you get a couple of weeks in between, or depending on how long you want. And she gives you, you kind of build up on the exercises to do. She provides the equipment and stuff that you need to do. It's all stuff you can do at home. So you don't need to have to, I mean, I know obviously you've got a gym membership, but if you haven't, you haven't got to. And I think it's really important not just to clench our pelvic floor, but also to learn to relax it. And it has a massive impact for, you know, bladder health, sexual function, and how we feel and our posture. And again, with exercise, if you are constantly leaking urine, you're not going to want to go to do a HIIT class where you're jumping around, aren't you? Because you're going to feel really self-conscious.
Yeah.
You're worrying about odour. You're feeling, you know, things with intimacy and things like that as well. And it's really sad sometimes when women come and tell me how much they're struggling with not just bladder continence, sometimes with fecal incontinence, you're being conscious of poo. And sometimes you see these women, and this has been going on since they've had children, and they're in their 50s, and you think, you poor thing, you've just been coping with this. And again, this comes back to this, you know, we must inform women, we must empower women, we must talk about it. We're so British, aren't we? We don't talk about orgasms, we don't talk about sex, we don't talk about weighing ourselves, you know, everything's fine. You know, but actually we need to be more open and
the
honest.
The body's very complex, isn't it? And the older it gets a bit more tired, and it does need looking
after. There's more demands on it.
Yes, exactly. It does definitely need more assistance, but it's knowing the right things to do. And I think all of a sudden wellness has become such a massive subject that it's a minefield of education out there. TikTok, for example, can fill your head with all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I know, because I'm guilty of that. Instagram, the same, Facebook, whatever. They will give you, and then so you're trying that, and then you come off and you think, well, that hasn't worked. But people aren't really giving these things time to work. Or are they the right things in the first place?
As soon as doing your homework, actually, what has the, you know, what is the knowledge that this person has got who you're trusting? So for Joan, who does the holistic core, she is trained as a physio, and then she has done additional training, holistic core and menopause. So for her, I love working with her because I know she is a really good, reliable, science-based source of information that I trust, as opposed to, you know, somebody who's basically just jumped on the kind of menopause bandwagon looking to make a quick buck, who hasn't got those credentials behind them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we're spending money on ourselves and self-care, let's really focus on where we're spending it. You know, we talked to me at the Wellness Retreat about how you can spend a lot of money on supplements and vitamins, but if all you've got is really expensive pee, you know, then actually you're not going to see the benefit of it, and kind of make it, and to kind of pick the right supplements and to make it count, and to use the ones that do help you. And that there is a bit of a variation between women. What some women find helpful, they may not find so helpful, you know, for other women. But I think it's making sure you really are interrogating your sources, because I think this kind of it does anger me that there are people preying on women who are feeling really, it's a bit like when you have a baby, isn't it? Like, I remember Heidi didn't sleep, so at 3 a.m. I would be ordering all sorts of random shit on Amazon. They promised me that she would sleep. And you know, people were making a lot of money off me at that point, and actually I should have just gone with it, and she finally slept when she turned 4, you know, just to save my money. But you know, it does worry me that it's a little bit like this with menopause.
Oh, definitely.
And that, you know, if we're going to spend money, and I think, you know, it is a form of self-care, you know, to access these sources of information, but spend your money on the right people.
No, that is great advice, actually, and it is about doing your due diligence on that, isn't it? Definitely. Right, well, we are, let's take a little break, get you a drink, because I'm exhausted in your ear, I think. Sorry, I can't, once I get into this with you, I can't stop. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back for part two. So part two, we'll go over lots more menopause symptoms and get Nikki's expert help.